Thank you for listening to the Finally Quit Porn podcast. My name is Thomas Molyneux and I am here to share my own journey of quitting porn and a lot of tips, advice, stories, and really interesting guests who have their own perspectives on how to quit porn for good. If you would like further support, go and check out thomasmolyneux.com where you can find more resources. So thanks a lot for listening. Let's get into today's episode.
Hello and welcome to the Finally Quit Porn podcast. Today I'm joined by my good friend Theo Ward. Welcome on the show, Theo. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you for coming on. Do you want to start off by maybe telling us a bit about how we became friends, like, and the sort of story of me and you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think how far it goes back, to be honest with you, because it's primary school, or is it childcare? Or, like,
I don't know, actually.
But I think primary school in Sheffield, and then I don't know, I felt like we were always kind of amongst each other. I don't know if we had the exact same classes for all of them, but then yeah,
always. This is just, like, age like 4 or 5, isn't it?
Say 4, and then from there it just kind of, yeah, I can even think back to when we were playing in the playground and, like, coming up with games and stuff, and yeah, with, like,
I used to love that, yeah, coming up with games, like, yeah, the imagination that kids had. I don't know if kids still have as much imagination, but back in the day we would just make up games and play in the playground. It was great.
Yeah, constant. Yeah.
Be like, yeah, me, you, maybe Ali Castle.
Yeah. With you, McCormack, Jess.
Oh, yeah, Jess Granny. Yeah.
But yeah. And then sort of just started to get way more into football.
Mm.
I think from the influence of you, actually, because I wasn't playing football straight away, I was playing tennis. And then it was when I started going to school that realised no one else is playing tennis, everyone's playing football. So then immediately just tried to get on with football so that I kind of, yeah, be more intertwined with the friendship groups at school. And then, yeah, Nether Green and all this kind of stuff. But, it goes back quite far, to be honest with you.
And we've, you know, kind of reunited even more now with us both living in Manchester again, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's mad how ended up in the same city.
It's funny how we've kind of sort of, I don't know what the word is, maybe converge, you know, where you kind of, like, go into the same sort of route in life in a way. Because there's quite a lot of similarities between us now. And that kind of leads me into, like, asking you what you're up to at the minute, you know, with university and everything.
Yeah, yeah. So studying counselling and psychotherapy at university. And the degree is mainly just to become a therapist. There's no other real reason for it. Like, it's, I guess, I don't know, you forget a lot of times that you are doing a bachelor's, so there needs to be academic work in there. But all of your lecturers, they're all qualified therapists that have to have their own clients for like 20 hours a week, as well as teaching. And so I think it's a really cool way how they've done that, because I remember, I think it was Elon Musk that actually said, a lot of business lecturers at university, he said 90% of them know less about how to run a business compared to a drug dealer. It's like all they've done is just been in the books and academia, but they've never had their own business. And then so really that's what you are wanting if you're going to university for business studies. Like, obviously I get there's the academia and all that side of it, but you want to know how to be a great businessman. And so with us, we've got all of them, apart from one who's kind of strange, but he's still out in his own way. But they're all fantastic therapists. And so you find yourself in class just asking them, okay, so what would you do in this scenario and stuff like that? And that's genuinely what you would need for an up-and-coming therapist.
All your lecturers are therapists?
Yeah. They have to have at least 20 hours with their own clients in order to be fit to teach on the course. And they're just great people, because I find that a lot of therapists, their reason for getting into it, it's just an interesting topic conversation anyway, because it's like, what made you go into, you know, wanting to help people with their mental health and understanding it? And that's usually because they've had their own experiences of it, and they're just very caring, giving people.
So you feel like some of the lecturers, like the people that you're around in university, have their own backstories, they have their own reasons why they've got into it, and that makes
massively
them,
yeah, know. Like, one of my favorite mentors is called Guillermo. He's Argentinian guy, and he grew up in Argentina, but then he got into ballroom dancing really young and he became amazing at it. And then so I think like 12, 15, he got a one-way ticket to Scotland and was in Glasgow, basically with the ballroom dancing set up there, really prestigious one. And so it's so strange how he's got this really strong South American features and then this really strong Glaswegian accent, and he's also quite camp as well, so it's just this like mad blend of all these different things where you'd look at him and think, as soon as you hear his voice, but like, I did not expect that. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And then anyway, so he got into ballroom dancing, he was doing amazing at that, he was traveling around Europe to his competitions, and then his parents back home, they actually really unfortunately, they were killed by a drunk driver, both of them in a car, and then he just completely fell apart and, you know, just hit rock bottom. And then through that experience, then decided, once he kind of started to come out of it, I'm going to get into being a therapist, whether he had a therapist that really changed his life or he just wanted to learn more about mental health. I think that's a lot of the reason why therapists begin their journey on it as well, just wanted to understand mental health, and then through that understanding realize they've got a good knowledge and lead on to it.
So what led you into wanting to be a therapist?
Yeah, it's mad, like, so where do you even start, because it was actually during COVID that I realized I wanted to pursue something that I really thought was in tune with me, because the one positive about COVID was that it forced you just to come to a complete halt, like, you know, with the furlough and everything. And I was working in a job where I was supposed to be there 6 months working at this pub, and I blinked and 2.5 years went by and I was like, what the fuck, can I swear?
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell, like, what the fuck's going on? Because I was just such a time vortex of like, that was not supposed to happen. But I think the hospitality industry is just like a Venus flytrap. It can really just lure you in. And once you're in it, you know, you're with nice people. It's kind of fun work. And it's surrounded by alcohol. It just goes like a blur. Yeah. Like, and anyway, and so came out of that because of COVID. And then I was thinking, what do I actually really want to do? And I read this book that was all about finding your element. And that's actually the name of the book. I forget the author, but the concept was basically, the author was saying, finding your element, and people say, oh, she's in her element, he's in his element. What does it actually mean? And then their own understanding of it was, the irony is whenever you're in your element, you don't realize you are because you're so focused on what you're doing.
Like you're in that flow state?
Yeah, literally flow state. And so it links to the Taoism as well that I'll talk about. But when you're trying to think about finding your element, you've got to try and take yourself out of your look outside the box, whatever you want to call it, and think about times in your life where you just felt as though you were in this flow state. And this could be anything, though. It's not as something as simple as like a certain career. It could be something as simple as cleaning, as organizing, as a skill at editing. And for when I think about it myself, it's quite interesting how some people that I knew growing up, it was so evident what their element was, because like I feel like you might agree as well, we played with some footballers and it was just like, you're just born different. Like you have this ability that is just God given, whatever you want to call it, like where it's just, they're just different somehow. They're accessing this state where it's like they're just flowing with it. And then so the book was basically saying, think about finding your element and how what might apply to you in that sense of something that you tap into, and then think about a career which will be able to tap into that. So you're not going to find, it's quite rare to find an element where it can just apply entirely to a career, because even with football, I'm sure there's so many different aspects of the training, the discipline, the maybe even the, you know, the politics that goes around, I don't know, where footballers would be like, what the hell, this isn't, you know, what I signed up for, this is difficult to me, whatever. But so then I realized that mine was listening. Like, I really just enjoy getting deep with people, having deep conversations, and I feel like I enjoy doing that and have an ability to open people up quite well. Like, there was a girl that I worked with at the pub on the first shift that we had, first time meeting her, and she ended up telling me her whole life story by the end of the shift.
Wow.
And then the next day she was so like skittish around me being, and I eventually said to her when I was working with her the next day, I was like, what's up with, like, what happened? Like, what's up with you? And then she was like, Theo, I ended up telling you my whole bloody life story. Like, and I've not even told my sisters some of that stuff. Like, and so just these little other tales of people letting you know, like, oh, I feel like I'm really open up to you, or somehow you quite naturally gain a lot out of me. And then, yeah, in COVID, I was like, all right, fuck it. Let's find out how to do this. I don't really enjoy education for different reasons, but realized that, yeah, the best way would be doing this degree, because it's accredited by the BACP. So once you graduate, you're a qualified therapist and can go straight into it. Like, it's all kind of setting up placements rather than doing dissertations and stuff, which I think is great. But yeah, so that's kind of how I saw that pathway, I guess.
Mm. And you were saying earlier about other people, they have kind of the two sides of it, in that one, maybe they can like find their element and stuff, but then on the other side, it's like you've maybe gone through something that makes you passionate about helping people with their mental health as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because I think with my own experiences of mental health, I really just wanted to understand my own mind. And I don't know, even just for the sake of conversations, it's like, it's one of the things that just intrigues me so much. Like, I'm happy to talk about, you know, the day-to-day stuff or what's going on and standard small talk, but then I really, really enjoy getting into the nitty-gritty of like, yeah, but tell me how you're, like, tell me what's on your mind, like, tell me what are you going through and everything. Because I feel like it's a really cool way of connecting people. And also, I have this opinion that if you're able to talk about your trauma and discuss it quite freely, then it doesn't really have much of a hold on you, as if you weren't. But I respect and I do understand that people don't want to talk about all the things that fuck them up, but, and it might be really personal information, but I feel like once you start to have a different relationship to your trauma, in the sense that you can talk about it quite freely, and even when I'm talking to or listening to people, they think it's this relationship where I'm helping them so much and it's their turn to speak, and afterwards they'll kind of joke with me, be like, oh, you know, thanks for listening to my TED talk and stuff. Like, it's like, no, I'm gaining as much out of this as you are just by talking about it. Because when you hear different people's mentalities and aspects on life, I guess you start to form your own as well, and it's really interesting. It's probably the same way, you know, you start doing the podcast and what you're doing, if I'm to guess, you know what I mean? So
yeah, I think something I've found over the last year or two in particular has been doing my Samaritans volunteering.
Yeah, that's wicked.
It's been really cool because it's kind of opened my eyes up to how we all struggle as human beings. Like, it's kind of provided me with a new lens into the reality of the human experience, in that we all do have tough times, and it's really intimate on those calls. It is a little bit like you've got a mini therapist session, but the caller is there to really express how they're feeling and the thoughts, because it is just over the phone and they don't really have long with us. It's not something that they can just buy and, you know, have a session once a week. It's like, right, I've got 30 minutes or however long to kind of really just get what's on my mind out there. And so you hear all these stories and how people feel and the loneliness and the anxiety or the feelings like they're not good enough. And for me, although, yeah, I am helping them by listening, it does add value to my life in the sense that it deepens my appreciation for how we all do struggle. And it just makes me more aware of how, like, you know, you're not alone when you're going through a tough time. Yeah. I think that helps a lot. And you were saying that, you know, it's helped you you were saying how it can help people to, like, talk about what you've been through or your trauma or what's going on for you. Do you want to kind of share how that's helped you in your life?
In terms of just talking to people about
my, yeah,
I think every time that you go through it and discuss it, first of all, it allows you to listen to yourself when you're saying it and reflect on your own words.
Mm, that's interesting.
But then, and just also kind of see, you know, what comes out. And then either during or after, you can kind of be like, oh, wow, that was interesting how I went down that rabbit hole with it, or my emotions when I was saying this. But then I think the best part of it is when you talk to people and you can tell when someone's like genuinely listening to you, or because there have been multiple times where I've been talking about it and I can tell I'm talking with people where they're a bit like taken aback by it, like, well, this is really personal information and feel like it's quite heavy, yeah, and weighing on them, which I do get, because maybe for them, if they were talking about these type of intimate things, this would be like a real big thing for them. Mm. So they think they're experiencing like a big thing on my part and being a bit like, well, I don't know how to deal with this. or if they do just kind of, I don't know, struggle listening and like just tap out with it. But then, yeah, when you do have people that are really on the similar wavelength to you, you get their own side of the story with it, in terms of, say, if I talk about these events and then what the impact was for me, you hear their version of it.
So does it become like less about you in a sense? Because like, let's say we go through something, often we can like internalize a lot of feelings that aren't actually to do with us so much, but they're kind of just, it is what it is sort of thing.
Yeah, like for example, with our therapy degree, yeah, the main theory that we're doing, that we're being taught on and, you know, practicing, is person-centered therapy. And to cut it really brief, it's basically a principle that like you as the therapist act like a mirror to your client, and it's a client-led session where you go wherever the client goes, and it's all about allowing the client to give them the space to come to their own understanding of things and their own self-actualizing tendency and all that kind of stuff. But it's giving them the tools to be able to come to these realizations themselves, rather than going to a therapist that's being like, all right, okay, I'll tell you what's wrong with you and what you need to do. So it's good for improving their independence. And a lot of the times it's crazy how simple the techniques are, but you know, you can talk about an experience and a big, probably the most basic skill in person-centered therapy is you'll say something like, oh, it sounds like, or it feels as though, or, and you listen to what they say, interpret your own feeling, and reflect back their words in your mind and what you felt, and like being very honest as well. And so someone could be talking about, you know, this experience with their parent, and you can just feel how tight they are in their chest when they're talking about it, and it's talk about all these different emotions, and then just by saying something like, oh, you know, it sounds as though it's really draining for you, and then having them hear, and it can, you feel like sometimes you feel like a bit of an idiot because like, I'm just saying something so basic, but then once they hear that back to them, and they're like, yeah, it really is, and then this opens a different pathway that they go down, because they can tell that you're on their level. Like say when two friends are talking, it's how you know they're listening typically goes like this, where it's a give and take of you talk about an experience, I say, oh yeah, I know what you mean because I had this kind of happen, and then they're like, yeah, you get it. And so that's great, because they're realizing that, yeah, he does understand what I'm talking about, because he's given an accurate
anecdote
of his own event, version of events that I can also relate to. But it's this thing of like, you know, I talk, you talk, because the style of therapy where it's just one person talking about all their issues, like that's not a normal way to socialize, like and so yeah. But then with therapy, it's basically not making anything about you, and it's just reflecting back in person-centered therapy, it's just reflecting back their own feelings and thoughts to them and seeing how this goes and how this unfolds, and really being in the frame of reference. And so the three main things that you, the three biggest skills person-centered therapy is UPR, which is unconditional positive regard for the client, which basically just means, yeah, like, you know, you're always trying to see it from their frame of reference, and even if some things that they might be saying could be quite triggering for you, it's trying to understand it from their point of view and have that empathy. So empathy is the other one. And then congruence, which basically just means being in touch with your true feelings. So even like if they were to be talking about something and you notice that you get a lump in your throat whilst listening to this, just vocalizing that and saying it to them is a really good skill to do in person-centered therapy. And it might be, and it's mental how often they'll also say, yeah, I feel that too. Or just by saying that, it really makes the client be like, wow, this guy is so on my level, and just breaks down so many barriers for them to talk about so many other things.
Yeah. Have you practiced this much?
Yeah, massively. Because all the first year we did practices where for like 15 minute sessions or 30 minute sessions, all of our classmates, we take it in turns to be client and therapist, which is a pretty weird dynamic to have when you think about, like, I don't know, people's other university experiences compared to ours. Like, I could, the first 2 weeks of my degree, I could go around the entire room and tell you about like people's heavy trauma.
Yeah.
I didn't even know their names yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's mental. And then, and then just recently as well, we did our module for professional practice. And so we do 2 half-an-hour sessions again, like taking it in the role of therapist and client with the classmates. And everyone talks about their real shit as well. It's funny how, you know, there's the option to just lie, but everyone's like, nah, fuck this. Like, if I'm going to do it,
I'll probably get a free therapy session.
Yeah, and yeah. Just, and it's way more sincere like that as well.
And I guess for the therapist, if like everyone's kind of taking that approach and being honest and authentic, then again, it kind of provides more room and space. Like, I suppose that's why I am really keen to create a community now of guys who all want to quit porn, because what I've realized is by being part of like a community, you can understand that actually you're not alone in your struggle. And so it's great that like within your group settings, you know, everyone's kind of being vulnerable and open, because
massively
creates that space for other people to also be open.
And it also creates an environment where, like, you know, there's some films you watch and there's a really emotional scene and it makes you cry just because you can feel the emotion of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, what a scene in that film. But then you experience that in the flesh. Like, there's some scenarios that I've been in where you're listening to this person talk and it's like, oh my God, this is just such raw emotion. And just so like, there's, feel like you're seeing their true soul, like everything. Mm. And it's just like, fucking hell, it's mental. And the air is just so thin and all this different stuff. And it's just so, there's so many sensations there, but it's just so raw.
I don't know about you, but do you ever like come out of those situations and you're kind of back in reality and you're like, I don't know, you go to the shop and like you buy your weekly groceries and it's kind of like, geez, everything seems so almost superficial in a way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, when you've come from that where it's just so honest and so like just laying everything out there, and then go back in society where it's all just, everything reminds you that, I don't know, it's all there as a way to profit and just business is going around. So I don't know. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah,
it just like, feels a bit mechanical to
me. Yeah.
You know, like people have to sort of put on a brave face because, well, I don't know. I guess it's just the culture. It's just the way that people have been socialized and brought up. And I think things are going in a different direction in some ways.
Yeah, with massively.
Like people are talking about mental health a lot more now, but
it wasn't even a thing back 10 years ago.
Yeah. So I was wondering, right, this is going to be rogue, like very rogue.
Yeah.
But do you want to do like a little demo? Like, we could do maybe 5 or 10 minutes where I'll be the client as such, talk about maybe a problem to do with trying to quit porn, and you can be like the therapist, like a practice.
Oh,
mad. Sort of thing.
Yeah. I'll be down. Yeah. that's such a curveball, but I'm so there for it. Yeah.
Should we do it?
Yeah, why not?
Come on, why not?
So I'm trying to think, because obviously, like, I don't know, there's the contracting side of it and stuff, but yeah, I guess I'll just talk to you in a way that...
What do you mean the contracting
side? Well, as in, say if we're doing a proper therapy session, it's like I kind of contract with you just to kind of let you know about confidentiality and all this kind of stuff, but I'm saying that more that like, I'll just, so aside, rather than being like so professional, I'll just kind of talk to you as though I'm a person-centered therapist and what I kind of would be saying.
Yeah.
In the middle. Yeah.
We'll do like a demo, I guess. Okay, cool. Shall I start or should
That's
you?
The thing. Cause like normally it'd be like starting the contract, but I feel like, yeah, if you just start talking about whatever's on your mind and then I'll just like flow into it. And so it'd kind of be like a, almost like a person-centered therapy conversation.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. This will be fun. I don't know how long we'll do it for, but we'll see. Until I'm like too deeply distressed.
I'm so here for it. Yeah.
All right, come on then. Okay. So yeah, I'll be honest. Like I think the last sort of 4 or 5 months have been difficult for me because I, about 5 months ago, I kind of thought I'd cracked this problem with quitting porn, and I was really, really confident and like just happy that I'd overcome this problem that I'd had for like basically 8 years. And then over the last 4 or 5 months, I fell into old habits and went back into having these binges and edging and looking at sexual content. And to be honest with you, I just think it led to a big dip in my confidence, and I'm back on the up now, but I don't know. I think sometimes a part of me feels like I can't help other people quit this problem until I've gone X amount of days without looking at porn or masturbation myself. And so it sometimes makes me feel like I can't move forward, and I feel a bit stuck. Like, cause I'm still working a 9-to-5 job, and then I'm trying to build this business and help people quit, and I've done so much work on myself, and I guess sometimes I feel angry at myself. I feel frustrated at myself, I suppose, that I haven't been as consistent as I like.
Yeah, so it sounds as though there's real pressure on yourself, but it comes from you.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on me. And, you know, the first thing that came to mind when you said pressure just then, like straight away, is like where the pressure's coming from. Like I know where the pressure's coming from, but even like now, like even with you in this like safe environment, I find it difficult to talk about because I know the pressure is to do with my feelings around my mum having cancer. And it's kind of like time's ticking, and I put this pressure on myself, and it feels heavy, like really heavy actually, like in my heart. It's quite overwhelming. And I don't often think about this, you know. It's not something that I really process. It's just kind of always there. It's like relentless pressure to succeed. Yeah, like always kind of grinding in a way. And then sometimes I give myself like a few days off and I'm like, all right, you know what, I need to be like compassionate and like look after myself, and you know, it's okay to eat a pizza or whatever, which it is okay to eat a pizza, like, or a bit of cake, but then it kind of goes on, and I'll eat more pizza and more pizza. Or yesterday, for example, right, it was quite interesting, so I ate like quite a lot of donuts. Yeah, I was having a family celebration, ate a lot of donuts, and then when I got home I was using my 7-step process to kind of understand what's going on for me and my emotions, which I've created recently, the 7-step process. And what I realized is that I had this inner critic, and it was like going crazy at me. It was actually disgusted in me, like I felt disgusted, seriously. Like I was trying to figure out how I felt, because I hadn't ever put a label on that particular feeling before. And eventually where I got to is that I felt disgusted in myself for overindulging.
Wow.
And I guess it was challenging for a little while. And then I looked after myself quite helpfully. You know, I journaled and I observed these feelings, and I tried to go back in time to a place where I'd felt disgusted in myself again. But on that occasion, I couldn't figure out where those feelings of disgust really were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then I woke up and did my hour's meditation and cracked on with my day, and it's been quite good. But yeah, I think the main problem I have is that I feel like I have to And I know I don't have to, but I feel like responsible for making more money so that I can help other people. And like I guess it's not even about the money. I think it's about like worthiness. It's like I feel like I have to prove my worth to like the world. And I think part of that's because I've said in the past that I'm going to achieve certain things. I said to myself when I was younger that, you know, when you're older, I'm going to be successful. I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that, or I'm going to help a lot of people. And I feel like this responsibility to achieve that, so that like a younger part of me is free in a way, because I've told that younger part that I would do that. And now it's like, I have to do that.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, it sounds as though through doing that, you tend to be stripping yourself of enjoying day-to-day life.
Yeah, I think, it's something I've definitely been thinking about lately. Like, I want to kind of just focus on enjoying the journey. And that's why I'm here doing this podcast, is because I realized recently, like, what's the point in me just sitting in my bedroom recording a YouTube video on my own, which is okay, but I mean, how much better is it to just go and actually record in a really nice studio with like a good friend of mine or somebody else who is also in this space? And even if this doesn't bring any success for me in terms of helping others or making money or whatever, it's like I've still had this experience, this unique, amazing experience of being open and vulnerable and talking to somebody in a podcast. It's like I'm not going to regret doing this. So yeah, I guess that feels okay, but...
What do you deem as success?
Success for me is... It's like a combination of two things, which I think is challenging. It's like having financial success, and I think I know why I want financial success, but then alongside the financial success, I only really want to achieve that through doing something like very ethical and not harmful to anybody, something that offers more value than the price. Like, basically, I don't want to rip anyone off. I don't want to just make money. Like, I want to provide something valuable to the world that actually has value and like helps people, but whilst also helping me achieve like financial success as well. And in a way, this isn't like 100% for me either. I feel like it's success that can be like measured, so that like, in a way, like, I hate to admit this, but like, I think part of me wants like my mum and dad to know that I've, and my sister to like know that I've achieved a certain level of financial success. Like, if they didn't, if like my mum, dad and sister could never know about this financial success, I don't know how much I'd want it, whether it is like fully for me or whether it's for like my family.
That's interesting. So there's a sense of validation there.
Yeah. And I think the validation, I think, is to do with my sister. And then part of the financial side of it is, I think it's like the validation comes from like wanting to prove I'm worthy to my sister, because she treated me badly when I was younger and like often judged me negatively and sort of looked down on me in many ways. And then alongside that, I think the financial side of it comes in with my mum having cancer and like seeing my dad every day, like after like school, like we'd sit around the table and have like a meal together, and like my mum would be like really upset. And this is when I was like 11 or 12, and like she'd be coming home from work and she'd be working really, really hard, my mum. And like, she worked around all these men who were super, super like sexist, to be honest, and treated her badly and didn't respect her very much. And my mum's really clever, in my opinion. Like, she's the most intelligent woman that I've met, in my opinion. I'm biased though, but anyway. so yeah, my mum was treated badly, and my dad couldn't just say to my mum, look, just quit your job, don't worry, I'll like kind of look after you or something. And then like subsequently my mum ended up having cancer, and that, in my opinion, was probably due to the amount of stress that she was under in that job, trying to like sort of maintain the family and everything, because my mum always earned more than my dad. And I don't, when I'm older, I don't want to be in that situation. Like, I want to be the carer for my family.
Yeah, that's huge, yeah.
So I think it's a combination of like validation and financial success, which I'm kind of wanting. But as I say, it's like the pace at which I'm wanting it is not healthy, and it doesn't feel good. I wish I could just relax and like do everything I'm doing with this podcast purely to just help people without any extra incentive of like wanting to earn money as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, sounds like there's a resentment towards the environment your mum was in. But then I see your relationship to quite a lot of stress that you're going through at the minute in trying to achieve something that you don't want to happen to yourself.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So like I'm trying to,
as in, because of that awful situation that your mum was in, you're trying to aspire to have a life, or it sounds like you are anyway, that is free of that. But in the process of having that desire, you're also putting yourself through quite a lot of stress and pressure.
Yeah, that's true actually. So like I'm kind of in some ways mirroring my mum in a sense, like in that she went through a lot of stress to try and provide for my family, and now I'm kind of doing that because I don't want the same thing to happen.
Or in a sense, like mirroring the environment. Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, because it was pretty bad for like a year or two. But then I guess I don't know. I think I kind of criticize myself too much. And I know like I'm doing all right, really. It's just I can say that and I know the words intellectually, but I don't feel it.
It's interesting to me, if you were to meet someone that was doing exactly the same as you and hear about their story and what they're going through and what they've achieved, what they've got going for themselves, how would you view that person?
I think they're doing well, because I've not met too many people who are genuinely focused on making the world a better place.
Yeah, for sure.
Whilst also wanting financial success. I think a lot of people I meet like kind of talk about making the world a bit better, or they kind of, alongside wanting to make the world better, they're kind of hating on the rich. And I think this is something that I've always seen in my family, because like in my family, people have sort of always presented this idea that if you're rich, you have money, then you're kind of a bad person. So there's like a part of me that doesn't want to make money because I don't want to be seen as like this like bad person by my bad family person. As well. Yeah. It's really, really confusing. So, but then that's limiting me from helping people more, because it's like, to help as many people as I'd like to help with quitting porn, it's like I don't have to, but I feel like money would help a lot, because then I can increase the production quality, I can hire editors, I can speak to experts and build an even better comprehensive platform to help people quit
and grow.
And it's this like contrast of like wanting connection with my family, but then maybe I'm going to lose life if I actually make money, and it's kind of confusing. So I don't know. But yeah, if I met someone else who was doing what I'm doing, I'd think they're doing well. I would. And I think if I just stick to the process, which I always talk about, then I'll actually do all right. Honestly, like today's, you know, I woke up, had my cold shower, did my hour's meditation, and I felt good. And I'd say most of the time I'm good. It's just now and then I don't feel so good. And I would like to not feel any pressure on myself. I would like to just feel free, I suppose, all the time.
Yeah, I get a real sense there's two sides of you that battle each other.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what do you think? Because I guess the thing I'm kind of struggling with is, like, how can I, like, is it okay for me to to help people quit porn and like be on this path of helping people quit porn when I'm not like 100% myself? And I know the answer to that is yes, but it's like
100% yourself.
So what'd you say?
100% yourself.
Like, yeah, like if I'm, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like perfectionism. 100% to me is like perfectionism, but I know it doesn't exist.
Mm.
But it's like, I want to be perfect. So I think, yeah, it's a good question. Like 100%, it's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, I'm curious what that does. What is 100% yourself? As in,
100% for me is probably like never ever looking at porn. Like,
I see, yeah.
Like never again in my whole life. And
that means you're 100% yourself?
That's, yeah, I mean, not. Yeah, it's true. Ah, I hope this helps people because I think, yeah, maybe, all right, so yeah, we'll put a pause on that now. But cool, that was really good.
That was wicked.
How much do I owe you?
Mate, I'm not even qualified, that's all for free.
That's the free trial.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I was going to say is like, that was good, by the way. That was very good. Yeah. It was useful. And yeah, I mean, how did you find that?
Yeah, it's really interesting. No, I love being in that state because you're just trying to get so immersed in their frame of reference and then just follow along. At any time you kind of feel this twinge, whether it be a certain word. Like, I'll go through like the techniques and stuff as well, because one of the best things is mirroring. And it's so interesting. It's like, there's a guy that is a, he has like a masterclass on negotiating. I think he was a fantastic negotiator for the police force in America. And he was saying one of the best techniques he would use is mirroring, because all you do is say the last 1 to 3 words of what they say. Yeah. And then in counseling, we do the same, and it basically allows them to feel like they can really open up about what they want to talk about. Anyway, but then in terms of counseling, mirroring is used where, when there's a word that seems like a really big word, like you said, a few in there of, well, obviously 100% myself, which just for me, that was so striking. It was like, what does it actually mean? And rather than me saying to you, what does 100% yourself mean? That can feel a bit more like I'm questioning you.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to draw out, let me understand this better.
Yeah.
And then there was a few other ones where he said relentlessly, and that, right, it's just like such a big word, such an emotive word. And then so you almost want to reflect this word back to them, being like, not is this true, but you know, you've just said relentlessly, and that's a pretty crazy word to use. Yeah. Like, it sounds like such a heavy word. And then it just allows them to draw more and their feelings and experience of this, whilst also hearing themselves back. Yeah. Like, wow, I did just say relentlessly. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
How, you know, how deep is it? And they kind of, you know, they can be open for, wow, I need to view things differently or whatever. But it just allows them to really draw more on what they're saying. And then silence is good, just to let them process. And then obviously, yeah, you probably heard me saying like, sounds like, and it kind of puts me out the equation, just keeps all the emphasis on you, where rather than saying like, oh, this is how it is, and being quite directive, like saying, if I say it sounds as though it's quite draining, whereas if I go, it's draining, isn't it? You'd be like, yeah. Whereas like, sounds as though it's draining, it kind of
creates it, it makes it more open for
way more open, you know? And that's why a lot of times as well, I think there's one time in there I was like, does that make sense? Or like kind of asking for your confirmation on what I just said, if that was true. Anyway, I'll do this on a podcast as well, but like, I go on a tangent. What was your actual question?
I can't remember, to be fair.
But they're like, what was that like for you? But it was, I don't know, it's just really... it's really interesting because even though you might feel as, again, like I'm doing you a service, but it just sort of reflects back on your own view of things. And a big part of congruence is that yeah, there was stuff in there where it made me feel a certain way. And so it's like reflecting that back to you in a sense of, I do relate to that, or that does make me feel a certain type of way, and not in like a negative way, and just like a powerful, like, wow, you know, you can feel you. And it's also this fine line between wanting to do stuff like that without ruining their flow, because there were several times in there where you could feel like my stomach dropped or like heart twinged or whatever, but it's knowing when to sort of put them in and not interrupt the flow. Because if you're on a thought that you want to continue, because I think, I remember one of the mentors saying, person-centered therapy is like the whole dialogue, 80% is the client, 20% you, max 20%. It's just pretty amazing how well it just opens things so well.
I thought it was interesting for me because I've not had any therapy. I've not had any for at least like 2 or 3 years. And I only had like 2 or 3 sessions. It's not really a lot.
Yeah.
And then like I don't really talk about these stuff, these kind of things with other people. But I think because I've been doing so much meditation recently, and like although I know I mentioned that like I'm in not the best place in some ways, but I think alongside that I'm probably in the best place I've ever been. Which is weird. I probably was kind of playing into, you know, not doing as well in a way because it helps in a sense.
I don't think meditation, if you're doing it often and have that in your arsenal, it doesn't mean that you don't experience like shit. You know what I mean? I think it just means you're way more in tune with what is going on.
I think what happened, like, because I'd been doing so much meditation is when I was like going into those feelings just then, like when we were doing that session and talking about it, it's like I was seeing it from way more of a distance than I probably would. And it's like there was a part of me that was saying all those things, and those feelings were real. Like they felt quite intense for me in my body. But I think because I have been doing a lot of meditation lately, it's like I wasn't quite as absorbed in them as usual. And I guess as well, I felt a little bit more comfortable expressing all of that stuff and like being honest about all that stuff, because to me, with my new sort of mindset, it's like that is just a temporary feeling or a thought, and it's not actually got that much power. And I think that's why I'm such a big advocate for meditation, especially if you're trying to quit porn, because all of those things that are going on for me, it's like they are going on for me now and then if I focus on those things, but at the same time they don't define me, and you know, I can just crack on with my life, and it's like I can process those things and kind of, like, you picked out a lot of things like 100% and like relentlessly, and it's just such an extreme way of thinking about things.
Yeah.
Like that's what it is.
Yeah.
And this is good to know for me, that like that is how sometimes I can think.
Yeah.
And I don't know where that extremeness comes from. Probably all the stuff I was talking about, you know, and it's also like that's okay, like to not think perfectly, and it's just something I can work on now. And so I think that's why.
Well, even saying not think perfectly is like, what's thinking perfectly?
literally, it's ironic, isn't it? Cause it's like I'm still striving for that perfection in many ways.
I also have that as well, perfectionism, because mine, like, not at the minute, actually, I've not seen him for a few weeks just because I had assignments, and then, but I'm seeing an amazing therapist, and then he has a hybrid, and this is definitely what I want to have as a therapist, where it's like having person-centered as well as cognitive behavior therapy and also psychodynamic. And so psychodynamic is all about looking into your past and relating a lot of stuff because of your childhood. Cognitive behavior therapy, called CBT, is where it's like pragmatic, like, okay, this is the issue, how can we put a plan in place and structure to work on it and stuff. And then so he ties in all of these ones, and they also has schema therapy, which is a strand of psychodynamic and also kind of CBT in a way, but anyway. But I've got something called like unrelenting standards, which then leads to perfectionism, because based on my childhood, it was like everything I felt as though my behavior had to be perfect in order for me to not be in danger And so this leads to unrelenting standards where even when I wasn't doing anything wrong, sometimes like, yeah, a parent could just kind of flip for no reason. So it's like, well, where's the logic then? Do you know what I mean? Like there's, and then this leads to unrelenting standards, which then leads to perfectionism. And it is like a massive issue, but at the same time, I think perfectionism is a double-edged sword because it also does lead to wanting to pursue things that are like very meaningful and do really well. And then the other side of it is that, yeah, you can just be your biggest critic and so much pressure, and sometimes prevents you from doing work because you like, it has to be perfect. But
this is going to be a very like therapist style question.
But yeah, I'm here for it.
I noticed you said like something along the lines of, I've got something called unrelenting standards. Like, what do you mean by I've got? Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yes, so this is schema therapy, so it's so interesting, right? So schema therapy is all about understanding schematics as to what the reason why you are the way you are.
What does schematics mean again?
Basically, it's like, it's almost like the blueprints or something, like schematics of, like a plan, like a blueprint and stuff. And so I guess your foundations. And then so schema therapy looks into the neuroscience of it and understanding that at the end of the day, we are animals, like we're in the animal kingdom. And so the schematics of a deer is that whenever they come across danger, their danger response is flight. Just take off. And so everyone kind of hears about fight or flight, but then there's also two more, which is freeze and fawn. And so every animal in the animal kingdom has one of these four reactions to danger. And so, yeah, you know, with a lion, it's fight. With a deer, it's flight. And obviously some can be mixed as well. Like, but and then so with freeze, the epitome of freeze is the possum, because like the possum in the animal kingdom, whenever it sees or experiences danger, its first reaction is just to play dead. And that's freeze. And then fawn, for me, it's kind of like dogs that have been, you know, domesticated dogs where their owner is just awful to them, abuses them all the time, but all they want is just their acceptance. So they're so submissive, and it's just like, that's how they're trying to survive, by just like pleasing. And it, when it comes to danger, it's just like, okay, how can I just be submissive to them so that this stops or whatever? And so, yeah, getting into the neuroscience of it, whenever we perceive danger, so if you think back to how we've evolved, you know, back in the good old days when like you'd see a predator coming at you, your amygdala, which is responsible for fear, would activate, and it would just pump adrenaline into your body and your brain, and then it shut, you probably know this stuff anyway, but I'm just saying this for the podcast, like it shuts off whenever your amygdala kicks in. It shuts off the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for logical thinking, which is kind of in the front of your head, and the amygdala is like, I think, back right or something. And then but the great thing about this is that it allows for just quick instinctive thinking. Because say if your prefrontal cortex was active whilst you see a lion coming at you, it'd be like, oh, there's a lion there. I think it's a carnivore. Like maybe we should kind of trade. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, whereas like amygdala, when it's there, it's just like bang, like I'm legging it before I've even thought about it, which is great. But it's quite rare that we're in physical danger anymore. In today's society, like the biggest dangers in society now are like bills, deadlines, like worrying about money and I don't know, relationship, whatever. Like, but you know, it's I guess the physical danger in the UK would be like, yeah, being hit by a car, being mugged or whatever. But the biggest dangers that I experience in my life anyway, yeah, like assignments and deadlines, bills, learn what you're going to do with your life, all this kind of stuff. And it's weird because they're not, a lot of them aren't imminent threats. Like right now, I know I've got a deadline due, but, and so that, and that's a threat to my life because I know if I don't do it, I could be, it could impact my life massively. And it, well, it will. Could be kicked out of university, do bad at university, whatever, and affect my career, money, way of life. And then,
You know what I heard though, right? And I don't know whether you were going to tie that back into schemas then. Yeah. But what I heard, right, is that if you go through something in childhood,
yeah,
and that's like tough, like what were you saying that you went through?
Yeah, just like just a parent being very like just they could just switch at any point, like, and be very unreasonable, basically. Yeah. Like,
if what, like under what conditions, or just
that's the thing. That's the thing. Any, like, they could just, and it's obviously because it's, you know, tied in to do with so many other reasons of either work and like divorce and having to share childcare and pay child support to someone that's like it feels like you're taking your son away, and yeah, I don't know, just sort of all these different factors.
So how did you have to like act to keep yourself safe?
Well, that's the thing. So it's basically a sense of I felt as though I was walking on eggshells all the time. Mm. And even though I wasn't responsible for their behavior, I felt as though I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, they could just kind of flip at any minute. And so it's just always being hypervigilant of what their emotion is and what, you know, what's going on with them. And it leads to kind of cool little superpower as well, actually, where you're then so hypersensitive to any body language, and like just you can really feel people's emotions just by being in the room with them. Well, actually, it's great, but it's also negative at the same time, which is quite interesting. I'm exploring with my therapist, but yeah, I'm just so observant, and this is why it's then led to me having really good empathy, because I'm just able to really read people so well and get in their frame of reference, because that was a big part of how I would basically like survive, I guess, as a kid.
So if you are unable to read somebody, or somebody maybe doesn't like you so much, like you're not being approved and what or whatever, you know, like, that triggers how you felt when you were younger, does that then trigger the amygdala? Because what's happened is the amygdala stores memories from your childhood, and when you're a child, you are not safe because you're so young to defend yourself, right?
So that goes into, yeah.
So then when you're older, if something triggers you, like, you're then in that state of flight, freeze, or fawn.
Yeah, massively. So it's like two things. So the first thing, is, as you were saying, like, if I can tell someone's distressed or just their emotions are kind of a bit unstable, I'm straight into that like amygdala state of like being very aware of it, because that was how in my schematics, that was how you learn to deal with danger, the same way, you know, animals grow up learning from their experiences in childhood and their parents as to like how to deal with certain things. That was mine, because as well, it was this feeling of if I don't deal with this, it could lead to such harsher consequences. So like, that's how, going back to the freeze, fawn, fight or flight thing. So I adopted, my responses were like freeze and fawn. So fawn was very submissive, kind of just like, you know, walking eggshells around them and stuff. And then if they were to pop off, it would straight away just be like, okay, just like take it on the chin, as in just be very submissive.
Yeah.
Because if you fight back, as in, you know, kind of give any sort of, actually, this isn't justified, then it would be worse consequences. So that was being drilled into me that actually whenever there is confrontation, just accept it. And because if you don't, it'll lead to worse situation. And then I then start to realize that if I don't do anything at all, I can't really do anything wrong. So that led to freeze.
Yeah.
And it's also because I realized that, I couldn't actually like fight them because they would fuck me up. And then I couldn't fly because I lived with them. So it's like, so you kind of, I guess the only other two were the only options. There's a second point that I was going to kind of bring on to that, but anyway, where I'm going with it in a minute is that like, it's crazy how this then leads to to unrelenting standards, because with that experience of their behavior and like freeze and fawn thing, I then adapted that to everything else in life, where it was like, okay, it has to be perfect, otherwise it's not worth doing at all. Mm. Because with schoolwork that really stressed me out, I just kind of adopted freeze, because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. This isn't perfect. So if I don't do it at all, I can't get it wrong. Yeah. And obviously that's like the worst thing you can do with schoolwork, because like it doesn't have that same approach where they'd rather you do something kind of crap than just not do it at all. Yeah. But then, it just kind of follows into other things where I say to myself, you know, with university and stuff, like, okay, I've got this assignment, and then that'll just build up so much into my head of like, oh my God, this has got to be, you know, this has got to be done right. Otherwise there could be serious consequences. And I just fall into this amygdala state, which is like, yeah, the panic state. And so I can just be in my living room, in my room, just like having an anxiety attack, kind of not able to move and think freely, and then screens come into it where I'm just there trying to like distract myself with Instagram, YouTube, whatever. It was until I actually met my therapist that I really started to understand. That was the one big mystery in my life where I just feel like I'm in this crazy state, like honestly about like 60% of the time of just like life, because it was just such a massive thing. And because it was really interesting how I'd say to him, I just feel really anxious. And he's like, yeah, but what does that mean? Like, what does your anxiety mean? And then started talking about how, it's like my thoughts are just going at 100 miles an hour. My heart's racing, no appetite and stuff like that. And then that's when he clicked with him, when he was like, ah, okay, this is like getting schema therapy. Because basically what happens with the amygdala when it activates, it has all these different knock-ons for physical symptoms. So your thoughts race, your heart beats faster. As I said before, there's no appetite. You're dehydrated, like your palms sweating and stuff.
I didn't know that one about dehydration.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so many things I'm about to lead into that create, like, just blew my mind.
Dehydration's been like a big trigger for me with the whole quitting porn thing. So
yeah,
I never realized like that had anything to do with the amygdala, because I knew this stuff about the amygdala and shuts off like the prefrontal cortex a bit, and you know that leads to more irrational decision making, and therefore you end up seeking out sexual content. But the dehydration one's been an interesting one for me in particular, because that has often, being associated with me having my setbacks, and sometimes it is just drink a few glasses of water and I'm a lot better mental. Again. Yeah. But anyway, you were saying.
But no, it's crazy how, but even then you don't really think like to even drink water as well. It's so mental, it's not clear in your head. But and then again with like acute vision and hearing as well, like you're super sensitive to all your different senses, muscles tense. Anyway, and then so this is all because these are responses that you would be having to danger that you've been involved with. Because, with, you know, running away from the lion, you need to have these quick thoughts of, okay, like, pinging, like, where to go. The muscles tense. And then when you're being chased by a fucking lion, you're not going to be thinking, oh, I'm kind of hungry, you know. Like, I've not had a drink of water for a while. Like, your heart's beating faster and everything, all this stuff. And so these are all danger responses. But then what's crazy is that, so that's basically why I'm saying about me being in my room, that was just what I was experiencing, like just all these just a constant flow of this stuff, and it felt like it would never end, wouldn't end for ages.
Sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's awful. It still does happen as well, that's the thing. Like I don't want to come across stuff like sorted all this stuff out, but it's just this is like the beginning of learning about it and how to deal with it. And then but the crazy thing is that if you then have those symptoms, physical symptoms, one of those or a few of those, that can then trigger the amygdala, because your amygdala thinks, oh, okay, this is danger time. Mm. So what's the typical thing that happens with a lot of people when they go out is, you know, they'll have a few drinks, have cocaine, and then this all makes sense in the time period, because it's like, you know, the cocaine's in your system, so your adrenaline's going, your heart's faster, and you're having a crazy time out. And your brain can kind of compute that. But then the day after, when you're dehydrated because the alcohol, there's a chemical in it where it actually just makes you piss more as well. So that leads to dehydration. And then the next day when you're dehydrated and your heart's beating faster, but you're just sat in your living room. And so it's like, well, there's kind of this contradiction going in your brain of, well, I'm just sat in my living room, but I can feel my heart's pounding. So I kind of must be in danger. And so because you can't process the situation, it doesn't make sense that those two don't align. Why your heart is beating faster just sat in your living room, your brain then creates the danger. Mm. And then so then you start thinking to yourself like, oh, I'm an awful person, I've got this wrong in my life. And it just starts, your brain automatically starts to create this danger because it can't see it or sense it. And so that's why a lot of people have really bad come downs with drugs and stuff, because...
And it's probably the same with porn and masturbation.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Because after a bad binging session, or, you know, after masturbating and looking at sexual content, for me, it's afterwards that I'm like in the most extreme state of mind. You know, we talked about how sometimes my mind can be quite extreme. It's after a setback that it probably is most extreme, and that's why one turns into two, and then two turn into three, and then four, because it's like that amygdala gets activated. And because I've put so much pressure on myself to quit porn, if I do have one setback, and because I'm like literally a certified life coach on a mission to help people quit porn, this is, it's like an extra layer of pressure. As we were talking about the other day on WhatsApp, but do you have any tools for dealing with this, you know, the amygdala being activated? I've discovered a few myself recently, but how about you?
Yeah, so like the biggest thing my therapist was saying was just like, just taking what you can do right now. Like, it's so funny that, so talking about it this way, like when you wake up in the morning, that's when you have the highest levels of cortisol running through your brain.
Yeah.
And so people that have anxiety and depression, that can be pretty extreme. That's why a lot of people that experience mental health illnesses and issues, that the mornings can just be definitely like the worst part of the day, like really awful. And so I still definitely relate to that now as well. And then what happens is you can kind of, for me anyway, I like wake up and then the day just seems so overwhelming.
Yeah.
All the shit I need to do and or want to do, and just it's so hard to get out of bed. But
What do you mean by overwhelming? Is that like the physical sensations again then?
Well, just like your mind racing in terms of like, I just don't want to leave this bed, and just I want to like engross myself in my phone just for this escapism and like this comfort. Of not having to think about all the stuff that like I need to do or should be doing or whatever is pressure. And then the day it can just seem so overwhelming. And as that goes on, you start to feel guilty, more guilty and guilty of like, oh my God, bro, it's like, it's 10 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock, it's like, it's 12, what the hell, it's 12, like, you know,
yeah.
It just goes on and on. And then, but my therapist is saying it's crazy how all you need to do in the day when you wake up is stand up. That's all you need to do, and then from there, all right, then maybe brush your teeth and then get changed and whatever. But it's just like seeing these tasks as just what your brain can understand, like, because I was wake up in the morning being like, I need to do my assignment, and my brain's just there like, what does that mean though? I don't get what that means. Do you know what I mean? Like, kind of, oh, I need to or maybe with you, like, I need to do this podcast. It's like, okay, but what does that mean? But then what it entails is getting dressed, leaving the house, getting your equipment, going to this place, do you know what I mean? Like taking it all, like just cutting everything up. Yeah. And he was just saying it's the worst time to plan your day in the morning, which is ironic because that's when your day starts. And so it's like you want to think, oh, okay, what I'm going to do today. But it's the worst time, he was just saying, to just, like get up, get amongst sunshine, just walk around, like, you know, walk around a bit.
Can I give like the audience two little tips here? Because this is what I've been implementing. Like, this is a big, big part of my finally quit porn system. So I am a huge, huge advocate for night routines. Like, I actually think that morning routines have been talked about way too much. Like, I think night routines are more important, right? The second thing is this is something that's changed my life. Buying a digital alarm clock, stick it on the other side of your room.
Yeah.
You have to wake up because it's so annoying.
Yeah.
So before bed, I turn my phone off. I put it in the cupboard, in the kitchen cupboard. I go and sit down. This isn't every single day. As I say, I'm not perfect, but this is something I've done. for, although I want to be clearly, but
100% you,
relentlessly striving towards perfection. where was I going?
That, so yeah, the alarm clock.
So we got the alarm clock, and then I have like a journal, and this is like the system that actually does work for me with quitting porn. Like, it's pretty much got, I think it has actually got 100% success rate, right? So I write down like 6 goals for the next day.
Yeah.
Never for that day, but I'll tick off like what I have done that day, write a little bit about what went well, what didn't, maybe I didn't achieve everything, didn't achieve all 6 goals. Obviously that's fine. Things come up. It's cool. Definitely not going to achieve all 6 today because I know there's a couple things that I'm not going to have time for. But anyway, it's all good. So I'll write down whatever's going on for me, thoughts, feelings, write down tomorrow's 6 goals, set the alarm. And also, I have like a plan at the moment for the exact meditation I will do the next morning. So the alarm clock goes off, I turn that off, then I make my bed straight away. That's really, really important for me because if I don't make my bed, it's going to be so tempting to get back in it.
Mm.
And then I'll turn the lights on, open the windows, drink a load of water because I'm usually really dehydrated in the morning. And then I'll usually still feel a bit groggy and not really wanting to like get started, but I'll kind of just meander around for like maybe 20 minutes. And then eventually I'll have a cold shower and do my hour's meditation. And yeah, this is like this routine, man, like, oh, bro, like I actually can't express how good it is for my mental health. Like, yeah, it just does wonders. And I'm not saying it's easy, I'm not saying it's like something that you can go and do maybe straight away,
yeah,
but it's all about like not listening to your brain at all, not listening to any thoughts. And I'm only able to implement this morning routine when I'm just like, I'm just going to do it. Like, I don't actually think about doing it. And then it becomes a habit.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to add that out there to the listeners in case anyone wants to try that. But even if it's 5 minutes meditation, it's just the structure, the habit.
Yeah.
Man, I love it. But anyway, yeah, what are you saying?
No, that was my, yeah. I don't even know what I was saying because I don't know what I was thinking.
You were saying about, I guess you were saying like tools.
Oh, yeah. No, and then
and,
just...
And thank you, by the way, for bringing up the morning because I think that's 100% true, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, it makes, I mean, just even with the neuroscience of it, yeah, like understanding the highest levels of cortisol when you wake up, and it's like, I don't know, it just kind of alleviates this guilt that you can sometimes have of like, I don't know, people talking about being a morning person and being like, oh, fuck, you know, mornings are actually just awful for me, or they can be, and just, yeah, getting a better understanding is, once you have the awareness, it doesn't mean the problem goes, but you can start to then pick it apart, because I think the worst feeling in the world is knowing there's so much wrong with you and having these and feeling just so uncomfortable within yourself, but no idea what the fuck's going on, just being like, what is actually wrong? And then so when you learn what is wrong, you have a tendency to be like, oh, okay, now I know, it's good. And it's like, nah, this is just when the work starts. But it just allows you to be in this space where you're not in the dark, and it's, you can just see things so much more clearer.
Mm. What do you mean by something wrong with you?
As in, for me, when I was just in this fucking crazy state where I'm just like,
you mean like when you're in bed, like scrolling?
Yeah,
and stuff,
yeah,
like
just
that.
Like having just this, it's like an anxiety attack, but it's just this like freezing thing, and you don't feel like yourself, like, and
was that something wrong with you? Or is it just something wrong with your system?
Well, yeah, as in, it's not something that, like I feel deeply unhappy with myself when I'm in that state, because I just know it's not me. And then I'll be out with people or a different setting, and I'm like, whoa, this guy's fucking, as in myself, is mental, like what he's capable of doing. But then when I'm by myself in my own space, I can literally just be like falling apart. And so it's just so weird to see these two sides of myself.
I relate to that a lot.
Yeah,
with,
exactly,
like the quitting porn stuff, because as I've said before, it's like weird because it's kind of similar with me and you. Like, we're both quite very like sociable people. Like, we tend to get on with people, but probably more than average if we're both honest.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so.
Like, we seem to like make friends with people quite easily and stuff. And then it's like you got this other sort of persona like behind closed doors where like you're really, really struggling with something from time to time. And it's a hard one, man. Like, it's hard to have that contrast.
Yeah, there was a girl I used to see, and then we were talking about, she was really cool to talk to because she was doing a really cool degree and then anthropology stuff. And like, we were talking about confidence, and then she was saying how she feels most confident when she's by herself. And I was like, mad, I actually feel most confident when I'm with people.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's such a weird dynamic to think about. Like,
yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Like,
I wonder why that is. Like, I wonder why you feel more confident with other people. Because I'm probably the same, but maybe it's a bit about like extroversion, introversion thing. I don't know.
Potentially. But then it kind of, it feels as though it's healthier to feel most, I mean, who's to say healthy or whatever, but yeah, to feel most confident when you are with just with yourself. Yeah. Well, maybe that's just what I just strive towards now because that's what I don't have. Yeah, but
that's a good point.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
But yeah, it definitely made me think though.
But yeah, so we were saying with like the tools was the so the
oh yeah, and then the a big one. Actually, it's funny how it was a girl that I well the one that I can talk about all the time that's like that I saw last summer and she had a piece of paper.
Just the Australian girl?
Yeah, the Australian girl. Like she had a piece of paper in her room and it just said "You are here," and it was on the wall and kind of in front of her bed. And then I remember asking her like what is that, like what's the whole concept there? And kind of not made fun of it, but I was just like, "You are here, what the hell's that?" And she's like, "Yeah, it's just to kind of remind me whenever I am feeling a bit of a anxiety attack, like I'm here, like, I'm in this room."
Yeah.
Like the stuff that's going on in my head isn't real. All that is real is that I'm in this room and just kind of noticing the surroundings, like the touch, what you can feel.
You know, it's interesting you say that you can because hear. You know, the meditation I do, that's on Headspace, right?
Yeah.
And Headspace is an app I'd highly recommend because it sort of integrates a lot of kind of like just good like philosophies, good ideas, good thoughts into your meditation practice. So you always start off with like 2 minutes of just absolute sage wisdom from Andy, the guy who created Headspace. And then he'll sort of talk you into your meditation. And what you were saying in the one this morning, because they have a different daily meditation each day. And this podcast isn't endorsed by Headspace, but I am a big advocate. So what you were saying this morning is like, okay, meditation isn't really so much about being somewhere. It's not so much about achieving something, it's more about what it's not. And the three things he said it's not is, number one, it's not about the future. So it's not about like being in the future. So often we obviously think about the future, that's where a lot of anxiety comes from, right?
Yeah.
Often we think about the past. So he said it's not about the past, it's not about the future, it's not about the past, and it's not about being there. And so if you're not in the past, you're not in the future, and you're not there, like somewhere else, wherever that is, then the only place you can be is here and in the now.
Yeah.
And that's all there is the here and now, which is true. That's all there ever is for anybody ever.
Yeah.
And that just came to mind when you were talking about, you know, you are here. It's like you are here right now. Like, yeah, that's all you are. That's
literally, because that was one of the things he was, because I was kind of asking him as well, like, you know, but what do I, like, looking for kind of guidance and stuff, like what do I do in this situation where I'm just freaking out and stuff and in that amygdala state. And then, yeah, that was one thing he was saying, like, to kind of bring yourself out of it. That's because I remember he was saying about meditation, and I was saying sometimes I feel like I have to calm myself down before I can get to a space to calm myself down.
Yeah.
And then sometimes meditation, which I don't know if you experience as well, like, when there's so much going on and then you just are, like, meditating your head, noticing your thoughts, it can be quite overwhelming because it's like, fucking hell, there's just so much going on there. But that's probably because of the typical states I get in with the amygdala state just going crazy, where my thoughts just like pinging. So then when you're meditating with that, trying to calm it down, but it's just so overstimulating because it's just like ping, 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 ping.
I think what I found through my meditation practice is like, this sounds like I'm kind of saying it's easy, because it's not. And this is why I fell off the last 4 or 5 months. It literally was, I stopped meditating because I was getting too overwhelmed in the mornings, really.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to face reality. I did not want to face those thoughts and feelings. But then when you come back to the meditation and you remember to not take a judgmental approach, because like, you know, it's easier said than done, but like meditation really is literally about awareness. It's not about achieving anything. But there's kind of this misconception that like your mind has to be in an okay state. But actually, if you sit with a racing mind and all you do is for that period of time, whether it's 20 minutes or an hour, you decide, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to close my eyes, and you watch the mind and you just let those thoughts race and you feel that intense discomfort, which does genuinely feel like it's life or death because of how the amygdala reacts. Mm-hmm. If you do that, I personally believe that that's actually the best thing anybody can do, is actually sit with those feelings, because that's how you like process it.
Yeah, true.
And then when those feelings come up again, you're like, okay, these are temporary sensations, I can handle these. And so I can only really say from my experience, and I know I feel like I'm kind of giving advice here, but like, honestly, doing that for me has been absolutely life-changing. And it's not something that I've done consistently, but it's something I want to do consistently.
Or just sitting with the feelings?
Just sitting with them, man. Like, yeah. You like, honestly, it's horrible. It's painful. But it's like an extreme version of going to the gym or something. You know, you just get through it. And it doesn't matter that you're in that intense pain. You don't try and get rid of it either. Like, you don't resist it at all. I think that's the other thing, is you're not trying to aim for a peaceful mind. It's being content with the fact that your mind is, and your body is feeling horrendous. I think that's my approach towards meditation, or at least the approach I'd like to try and consistently take. And I'm getting better at taking it. But I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
No, it's interesting. As in, like, because obviously you said about your day at the beginning when you used to meditate, and it just like would kind of mess up your day, or like be too overstimulating. Like, what was it? What were you saying about like, doing in the morning?
So like in the mornings in the past, like when I kind of fell out of my good habits a bit, I wouldn't meditate because I didn't want to face my mind. Mm. I didn't want to be aware of what was going on. So I'd rather distract myself.
Yeah.
But then recently I've got back into the habit of just doing the hour no matter what, even if my mind is horrible.
Yeah. And then
like this morning, like I woke up and I was like, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's when I discovered that I had like these feelings of like actual disgust towards myself for eating too many donuts yesterday. And I was like, oh my God, that's so interesting. Cause it's like, they are just thoughts. Like, that's all it is. You know, it's all right. And you can handle it now that you're like an adult and, you know, you're in control of yourself no matter what.
What does the knock-on effect do, as in like what's the benefit of like sitting through that?
Oh bro, it's like, oh, mate, I've never taken drugs, but if you've ever taken any drugs, I imagine like whatever that is, you know, I can't even describe this feeling.
Ecstasy,
like, it's so good. Because I'll do it for an hour, feel absolutely horrendous, I hate it, like, I honestly hate it, it's painful, right? But then I'll leave the house and I'm walking to work and I'm just like on some next level of energy. Like, it's just crazy, man. Like, so excited for life.
That's mental, yeah.
It's like all of the pain, all of the horrible negative thoughts, they kind of like fade away and I'm just like free. And it's just, oh, I love it. I love it so much. Not every single time, but just now and then I sometimes get into that state. It's like flow state. It's like I'm in flow state just with my day.
So mental.
From doing the hours meditation, because it like clears out all of these problems and all of these, I don't know how it really works yet, but I think it's because it soothes like the amygdala or something. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But it works for me.
But it's so interesting, because like, I tend to think of it as, if you're doing that, it could really just like drain you. Mm. But then if it actually gives you energy, that's so mental to me.
What do you mean like drain you?
How? As in like, just, because that's one of the things where I was saying to him about how I'm just like so exhausted. Because say if you were on edge the whole time because you're being chased by a predator, and so your amygdala state's active, like it is so mentally taxing because everything's just working on overdrive.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, if I was to sit through like an entire session of meditation, just like going through all this, at some point I'd want to just like distract myself and get on with the task, so that I'm not spending too much energy doing that. And so but I don't think I've ever really experienced maybe I haven't done it long enough, or maybe resisting it or whatever, like you're saying before, of if you do just sit through it, eventually it's like euphoric.
Yeah. It's kind of just like watching it, I suppose. Like, that's the best way I can put it, is you try and watch it as best you can. Like, you're just aware of what's going on, but you are going to get distracted. And I'll be honest as well, like, when I am in that state, like 95% of the meditation might just be the thoughts racing. And I'm not actually breathing. Like, I'm not like focusing on my breath. Like I am breathing, but I'm not focusing on my breath. just there, like, holding my breath for 20, for an hour.
But fucking blue in the face. Passing out like, oh, this is euphoric.
No wonder.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I do think, yeah, it's the sitting down, closing my eyes for the amount of time. It's not really the meditation. You can kind of forget about that side of things. It's just sit down and close my eyes and then try and focus on my breath if I can, but not having any sort of judgment of it. But yeah, that's what works for me. I'd encourage everyone to just give it a go, like one day, and just see what happens, really.
Yeah.
Because that's all you can do, is just see how you get on, try it once. For an hour and see what happens for you. But anyway, we should probably wrap it up there, because it's probably been like a lot longer than the hour we've booked for the room, so apologies, Andy. But yeah, all right, thanks so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. We didn't get the video recorded.
We fucked up on that part. We both bought cameras and both couldn't use them.
Literally, both forgot them.
Forgot one piece of metal.
Oh man, yeah, gutted about that. But you know what? I felt like for perfectionists, we both kind of dealt with that really well, didn't we? Like,
it's true. That's not my podcast, so I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, where can people find you if anyone wants to get in touch? Or do you want to say where people can find you?
I'm in Manchester.
Come to the 0161.
Yeah. No, I don't know, yeah.
Instagram? Are you on Instagram?
Yeah, Theo Ward. Well, Theo _ Ward, if you want to get in touch. Yeah, it's right out of my room to fucking talk about anything if you wanted to.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Theo _ Ward.
I'm bringing out a new book. No, I'm not.
Well, the book for you?
That
was him. The topic we didn't discuss. Literally, oh, Theo, do you want to come on the podcast? Talk about that was him. 2 hours later.
just regurgitate all some of the therapists said make out his mind. I don't know.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day.
Please.